"A kid called me Puss once," said the Cat doubtfully.
"I thought you had names in your own language," said Victor. "You know, like Mighty Paws or Speedy Hunter or something."
He smiled encouragingly. The others gave him a long, blank stare.
"He reads books," explained Gaspode. "See, the thing is," he added, scratching himself vigorously, "animals don't normally bother with names. I mean, we know who we are."
"Mind you, I like Speedy Hunter," said the Mouse.
"I was thinking that's more a cat's name," said Victor, starting to sweat. "Mice have friendly little names, like Squeak."
"Squeak," said the Mouse coldly.
The Rabbit grinned.
And I always thought rabbits were called Flopsy or Mr. Thumpy," Victor gabbled.
The Rabbit stopped grinning and twitched its ears.
Now, look, pal," it began.
"You know," said Gaspode cheerfully in an attempt to revive the conversation,
"I heard there's this legend where the first two people in the world named all the animals. Makes you think, don't it?"
Victor pulled out the book to cover his embarrassment. "Chanting and lighting fires 3 times a day.
"This old man," he began.
"What's so important about him?" said the Rabbit. "He just used to come up on the hill and make noises a couple of times every day. You could set your...
It hesitated.
"It was always the same times, many times a day."
3 times, 3 performances, like a sort of theatre," said Victor, running his finger down the page.
"We can't count up to 3, said the Rabbit sourly. "It goes 1, many, many times."
He glared at Victor.
"Mr. Thumpy," it said, in withering tones.
"And people from other places brought him fish," said Victor. "There's no one else living near here. They must have come from miles away. People sailed miles just to bring him fish. It's as though he didn't want to eat fish out of the bay here. And it's teeming with them. When I went swimming, I saw lobsters you wouldn't believe."
"And what did you name them?" said Mr. Thumpy, who wasn't the kind of rabbit that forgot a grudge. "Mr. Snappy?" "Yeah, I want this cleared up right now," squeaked the Mouse. "Back home, I was top mouse. I could lick any other mouse in the house. I want a proper name, kid. Anyone calls me Squeaky Boots," he looked up at Victor, "is asking for a head shaped like a frying pan. Do I make myself clear?"
The duck quacked at length.
"Hold it," said Gaspode. "The thing is, the duck says," said Gaspode, "that all this is part of the same thing. Humans and trolls and everything's coming here. Animals suddenly talking. The duck says he thinks it's caused by something here."
"How does a duck know that?" said Victor.
"Look, friend," said the Rabbit, "when you can fly all the way across the sea and even end up finding the same bloody continent, you can start bad-mouthing ducks, hm?"
"Oh," said Victor, "you mean mysterious animal senses, yes?"
They glared at him.
"Anyway, it's got to stop," said Gaspode. "All this cogitating and talking is all right for you humans. You're used to it. Thing is, see, someone's got to find out what's causing all this."
They carried on glaring at him.
"Well," he said vaguely, "maybe the book can help. The early bits are in some sort of ancient language. I can't..." He paused.
Wizards weren't welcomed in Holywood. It probably wasn't a good idea to mention the university or his small part in it.
"That is," he continued, choosing his words with care, "I think I know someone in Ankh-Morpork who might be able to read it. He's an animal too. An ape."
"How's he in the mysterious senses department?" said Gaspode.
"He's red-hot on mysterious senses," said Victor.
In that case," said the Rabbit. "Hold it," said Gaspode. "Someone's coming."
A moving torch was visible coming up the hill. The duck rocketed clumsily into the air and glided away. The others disappeared into the shadows. Only the dog didn't move.
"Aren't you going to make yourself scarce?" Victor hissed.
Gaspode raised an eyebrow.
"Woof," he said.
The torch zigzagged erratically among the scrub like a firefly. Sometimes it would stop for a moment and then wander away in some totally new direction. It was very bright.
"What is it?" said Victor.
Gaspode sniffed.
"Human," he said. Female. Wearing cheap scent. His nose twitched again. It's called Passion's Plaything. He sniffed again. Fresh laundry, no starch, old shoes. Lot of studio makeup. She's been in Bogle's and had... His nose twitched. Stew. Not a big plate.
I suppose you can tell me how tall she is, can you? Said Victor.
She smells about 5'2". 2½, hazarded Gaspard.
Oh, come on.
Walk a mile on these paws and call me a liar.
Victor kicked sand over his little fire and strolled down the slope. The light stopped moving as he approached it. For a moment he got a glimpse of a female figure clasping a shawl around her, with one hand holding the torch high above her head. Then the light vanished so quickly it left blue and purple afterimages dancing across his vision. Behind them, a small figure made a blacker shadow against the dusk. It said,
"What are you doing in my... What am I... Why are you... Where..."
And then, as if it had finally got to grips with the situation, changed gear, and in a much more familiar voice demanded,
"What are you doing here?"
"Ginger?" said Victor.
"Yes."
Victor paused. What were you supposed to say in circumstances like this?
He said, "It's, nice up here in the evenings, don't you think?"
She glared at Gaspard.
"That's that horrible dog who's been hanging around the studio, isn't it?" she said. "I can't stand small dogs."
"Bark, bark," said Gaspard.
Ginger stared at him. Victor could almost read her thoughts. He said bark, bark, and he's a dog, and that's the kind of noise dogs make, isn't it?
"I'm a cat person myself," she said vaguely.
A low-level voice said,
"Yeah, yeah. Washing your own spit, do you?"
"What was that?"
Victor backed away, waving his hands frantically.
"Don't look at me," he said. "I didn't say it."
"Oh, I suppose it was the dog, was it?" she demanded.
"Oh, me," said Gaspard.
Ginger froze. Her eyes swiveled around and down to where Gaspard was idly scratching an ear.
"Woof," he said.
"That dog spoke,"
Ginger began, pointing a shaking finger at him.
"I know," said Victor. "That means he likes you."
He looked past her. Another light was coming up the hill.
"Did you bring someone with you?" he said.
"Me?"
Ginger turned round. Now the light was accompanied by a cracking of dry twigs, and Dibbler stepped out of the dusk with detritus trailing behind like a particularly scary shadow.
"Aha!" he said. "The lovebird's surprised, eh?"
Victor gaped at him.
"The what?" he said.
"The what?" said Ginger. "Been looking all over for you two," said Dibbler. "Someone said he'd seen you come up here. Very romantic. Could do something with that. Look good on the posters, right?"
He draped his arms around them.
"Come on," he said.
"What for?" said Victor.
"We're shooting first thing in the morning," said Dibbler.
"But Mr. Silverfish said I wasn't going to work in this town again," Victor began.
Dibbler opened his mouth and hesitated just for a moment.
"Ah, yes, but I'm going to give you another chance," he said, speaking quite slowly for once. "Yeah, a chance. Like, you're young people, headstrong, young once myself. Dibbler, I thought, even if it means cutting your own throat, give 'em a chance. Lower wages, of course. $1 a day. How about that?"
Victor saw the look of sudden hope on Ginger's face. He opened his mouth.
$15, said a voice.
It wasn't his. He shut his mouth.
What?
Said Dibbler.
Victor opened his mouth. $15, renegotiable after a week, $15 or nothing.
Victor shut his mouth, his eyes rolling. Dibbler waved a finger under his nose and then hesitated.
"Oh, I like it," he said eventually. "Tough bargainer. Okay, $3.
$15.
"Five's my last offer, kid. There's thousands of people down there who'd jump at it, right?" "Name two, Mr. Dibbler."
Dibbler glanced at Detritus, who was lost in a reverie concerning Ruby, and then stared at Ginger.
"Okay," he said.
10 because I like you, but it's cutting my own throat. Done.
Throat held out a hand. Victor stared at his own as if he was seeing it for the first time and then shook.
And now let's go back down, said Dibbler. Lot to organise.
He strode off through the trees. Victor and Ginger followed meekly behind him, in a state of shock.
Are you crazy?
Ginger hissed.
Holding out like that? We could have lost our chance.
I didn't say anything. I thought it was you, said Victor.
It was you, said Ginger.
Their eyes met. They looked down.
Bark, bark,
said Gaspode the Wonder Dog. Dibbler turned round.
What's that noise?
He said.
Oh, it's just this dog we found, said Victor, hurriedly. He's called Gaspode, after the famous Gaspode, you know.
He does tricks,
said Ginger, malevolently.
A performing dog,
Dibbler reached down and patted Gaspode's bullet head.
Growl, growl.
You'd be amazed the things he can do, said Victor.
Amazed,
echoed Ginger.
Ugly devil, though, said Dibbler.
He gave Gaspode a long, slow stare, which was like challenging a centipede to an ass-kicking contest. Gaspode could outstare a mirror. Dibbler seemed to be turning an idea over in his mind.
Mind you, bring him along in the morning. People like a good laugh, said Dibbler.
Oh, he's a laugh, all right, said Victor. A scream.
As they walked off, Victor heard a quiet voice behind him say,
I'll get you for that. Anyway, you owe me a dollar.
What for?
Agent's fee, said Gaspode the Wonder Dog.
Over Holywood, the stars were out. They were huge balls of hydrogen, heated to millions of degrees, so hot they could not even burn. Many of them would swell enormously before they died, and then shrink to tiny, resentful dwarfs remembered only by sentimental astronomers. In the meantime, they glowed because of metamorphoses beyond the reach of alchemists, and turned mere boring elements into pure light. Over Ankh Morpork, it just rained. The senior wizards crowded around the elephant vase. It had been put back in the corridor on Ridcully's strict orders.
I remember Rictor, said the Dean. Skinny man. Bit of one-track mind, but clever.
I remember his mouse counter, said Windlepoons from his ancient wheelchair. Used to count mice.
The pot itself is quite...
The bursar began and then said,
What do you mean, count mice? They were fed into it on a little belt or something.
No, you just wound it up, you see, and it sat there whirring away, counting all the mice in the building. And these little wheels with numbers on them came up.
Why?
I suppose he just wanted to count mice.
The bursar shrugged.
This pot, he said, peering closely, is actually quite an old Ming vase.
He waited expectantly.
Why is it called Ming?
Said the Arch-Chancellor, on cue. The bursar tapped the pot. It went,
Ming!
And they spit lead balls at people, do they?
Said Ridcully.
No, Master. He just used it to put the machinery in, whatever it is, whatever it's doing.
Whum, whum.
Hold on, it wobbled,
said the Dean.
Whum, whum, whum.
The wizards stared at one another in sudden panic.
What's happening? What's happening?
Said Windlepoons.
Why won't anyone tell me what's happening?
Whum, whum, whum.
Run,
suggested the Dean.
Which way?
Quavered the bursar.
Whum, whum.
I'm an old man, and I demand someone tell me what's happening.
Silence.
Duck!
Shouted the Arch-Chancellor.
Plup!
A splinter of stone was knocked off the pillar behind him. He raised his head.
Be gods, that was a damn lucky escape.
Plup! The second pellet knocked the tip off his hat.
The wizards lay trembling on the flagstones for several minutes. After a while, the dean's muffled voice.
"Was that all, do you think?"
The Arch-Chancellor raised his head. His face, always red, was now incandescent.
"Bertha!"
"Master?"
"That's what I call shooting."
Victor turned over. He said.
"It's 6 a.m. Rise and shine, Mr. Dibbler says," said Detritus, grasping the bedclothes in one hand and dragging them onto the floor.
6 o'clock? That's night time," groaned Victor.
"It's going to be a long day, Mr. Dibbler says," said the troll. "Mr. Dibbler says you've got to be on set by 6:30. This is going to happen."
Victor pulled on his trousers. "I suppose I get to eat breakfast," he said sarcastically.
"Mr. Dibbler is having food laid on, Mr. Dibbler says," said Detritus.
There was a wheezing noise from under the bed. Gaspode emerged in a cloud of old rugness and had an early morning scratch.
"What they—" he began, and then saw the troll.
"Bark, bark," he corrected himself.
"Oh, a little dog." "I like little dogs," said Detritus.
"Woof."
"Roar,"
the troll added, but he couldn't get the right amount of statutory nastiness into his voice. Visions of Ruby in her feather boa and 3 acres of red velvet kept undulating across his mind. Gaspode scratched his ear vigorously.
"Woof," he said quietly. "In tones of low menace," he added, after Detritus had gone.
The slope of the hill was already alive with people when Victor arrived. A couple of tents had been erected. Someone was holding a camel. Several cages of demons gibbered in the shade of a thorn tree. In the middle of all this were Dibbler and Silverfish arguing. Dibbler had his arm around Silverfish's shoulder.
"A dead giveaway is that," said a voice from the level of Victor's knees. "It means some poor bugger is about to be taken to the cleaners." "It'll be a step up for you, Tom," Dibbler was saying. "I mean, how many people in Holy Wood can call themselves Vice President in charge of Executive Affairs?"
"Yes, but it's my company," Silverfish wailed.
"Right, right," said Dibbler. "That's what a name like Vice President of Executive Affairs means."
"It does."
"Have I ever lied to you?"
Silverfish's brow furrowed.
"Well," he said, "yesterday you said—"
"I mean metaphorically," said Dibbler quickly.
"Oh, well, metaphorically I suppose not."
"There you are then. Now, where's that artist?"
Dibbler spun around, giving the impression that Silverfish had just been switched off. A man scurried up with a folder under his arms.
"Yes, sir, Mr. Dibbler."
Throat pulled a scrap of paper out of his pocket.
"I want the posters ready by tonight. Understand," he warned. "Here, this is the name of the clique."
"Shadowy of the Desert," the artist read.
His brow furrowed. He had been educated beyond the needs of Holywood.
"It's about food," he said.
But Dibbler wasn't listening. He was advancing on Victor.
"Victor," he said. "Baby!"
"He's got him," said Gaspode quietly. "Got him worse than anyone, I reckon."
"What has? How can you tell?" Victor hissed.
"Partly because of subtle signs what you don't seem to be able to recognise," said Gaspode, "and partly because he's acting like a complete twerp, really."
"Great to see you," Dibbler enthused, his eyes glowing manically.
He put his arm around Victor's shoulder and half-walked, half-dragged him towards the tents.
"This is going to be a great picture," he said.
"Oh, good," said Victor weakly.
"You play this bandit chieftain," said Dibbler. "Only a nice guy, too. Kind to women and so forth, and you raid this village and you carry off this slave girl. Only when you look into her eyes, see, you fall for her. And then there's this raid and hundreds of men on elephants come charging."
"Camels," said a skinny youth behind Dibbler. "It's camels."
"I ordered elephants. You got
camels.
Camels, elephants, said Dibbler dismissively. We're talking exotic here, okay? And
we've only got one, said the youth.
One what?
Camel. We could only find one camel, said the youth.
But I've got dozens of guys with bedsheets on the red waiting for camels, shouted Dibbler, waving his hands in the air. Lots of camels, right?
We've only got one camel because there's only one camel in Holywood, and that's only because a guy from Clatch rode all the way here on it, said the youth.
You should have sent away for more, snapped Dibbler.
Mr. Silverfish said I wasn't to.
Dibbler growled.
Maybe if it moves around a lot, it'll look like more than one camel, said the youth optimistically.
Why not ride the camel past the picture box and then get the handle man to stop the demons and lead it back and put a different rider on it, then start up the box again and ride it past again, said Victor. Would that work?
Dibbler looked at him open-mouthed.
What did I tell you? He said to the sky in general. The lad is a genius. That way we can get 100 camels for the price of one, right?
It means the desert bandits ride in single file, though, said the youth. It's not like, you know, a master tack.
Sure, sure, said Dibbler dismissively. Makes sense. We just put a card up where the leader says, he thought for a second. He says, follow me in single file, Bwanas, to fool the hated enemy, okay?
He nodded at Victor.
Have you met my nephew, Sol? He said. King lad, been nearly to school and everything. Brought him out here yesterday. He's vice president in charge of making pictures.
Sol and Victor exchanged nods.
I don't think Bwanas is the right word, Uncle, said Sol.
It's Clatchian, isn't it? Said Dibbler.
Well, technically, but I think it's the wrong part of Clatch, and maybe Effendi's or something.
Just so long as it's foreign, said Dibbler,
with an air that suggested the matter was settled. He patted Victor on the back again.
Okay, kid. Get into costume, he chuckled. 100 camels. Oh, what a mind.
Excuse me, Mr. Dibbler, said the poster artist, who had been hovering uneasily. I don't understand this bit here.
Dibbler snatched the paper from him.
Which bit?
He snapped.
Where you're describing Mr. Sin.
It's obvious, said Dibbler. What we want here is to conjure up the exotic, alluring, yet distant romance of pyramid-studded Clatch, right? So naturally, we gotta use the symbol of a mysterious and unscrutable continent, see? Do I have to explain everything to everyone all the time?
It's just that I thought,
the artist began.
Just do it!
The artist looked down at the paper.
She has the face, he read, of a spink.
Right, said Dibbler, right!
I thought maybe Sphinx.
Will you listen to the man,
said Dibbler, talking to the sky again. He glared at the artist.
She doesn't look like two of them, does she? One spink, two spinks, then just get on with it. I want those posters all round the city first thing tomorrow.
The artist gave Victor an agonised look he was coming to recognise. Everyone around Dibbler wore them after a while.
Right you are, Mr. Dibbler, he said.
Right.
Dibbler turned to Victor.
Why aren't you changed, he said.
Victor ducked quickly into a tent. A little old lady, shaped like a cottage loaf, helped him into a costume apparently made of sheets inexpertly dyed black, although given the current state of accommodation in Holywood, they were probably just sheets taken off a bed at random. Mrs. Marietta Cosmopolite, former Ankh Morpork seamstress, until her dreams led her to Holywood, where she found her skill with a needle was highly prized. Once a darner of casual socks, now a knitter of fake chainmail for trolls, and able to run up a pair of harem trousers in a trice. Then she handed him a curved sword.
Why is it bent? He said.
I think it's meant to be, dear, she said doubtfully.
I thought swords had to be straight, said Victor.
Outside he could hear Dibbler asking the sky why everyone was so stupid.
Perhaps they start out straight and go bendy with use, said the old lady, patting him on the hand. A lot of things do.
She gave him a bright smile.
If you're all right, dear, I'd better go and help the young lady in case any little dwarfs is peering in at her.
She waddled out of the tent. From the tent next door came a metallic clinking noise and the sound of Ginger's voice raised in complaint. Victor made a few experimental slashes with the sword. Gaspode watched him with his head on one side.
"What are you supposed to be?" he said at last. "A leader of a pack of desert bandits, apparently," said Victor. "Romantic and dashing."
"Dashing where?"
"Just dashing generally, I guess."
"Gaspode, what did you mean when you said it's got Dibbler?"
The dog gnawed at a paw.
"Look at his eyes," he said. "They're even worse than yours."
"Mine? What's wrong with mine?" Detritus the troll stuck his head through the tent flaps.
"Mr. Dibbler says he wants you now," he said.
"Eyes?" said Victor. "Something about my eyes?"
"Woof."
"Mr. Dibbler says,"
Detritus began.
All right, I'm coming."
Victor stepped out of his tent at the same time as Ginger stepped out of hers. He shut his eyes.
"Gosh, I'm sorry," he babbled. "I'll go back and wait for you to get dressed."
"I am dressed."
"Mr. Dibbler says," said Detritus behind him.
"Come on," said Ginger, grabbing his arm. "We mustn't keep everyone waiting."
"But you're,
Victor looked down, which wasn't a help.
"You've got a navel in your diamond," he hazarded.
"I've come to terms with that," said Ginger, flexing her shoulders in an effort to make everything settle. "It's these two saucepan lids that are giving me problems. Makes you realize what those poor girls in the harems must suffer."
"And you don't mind people seeing you like that?" said Victor, amazed.
"Why should I? This is moving pictures. It's not as if it's real. Anyway, you'd be amazed at what girls have to do for a lot less than $10 a day."
"9,
said Gaspode, who was still trailing at Victor's heels.
"Right. Gather round, people," shouted Dibbler through a megaphone. "Sons of the desert, over there, please. Where are the slave girls? Right. Handlemen."
"I've never seen so many people in a click," Ginger whispered. "It must be costing more than $100. Victor eyed the sons of the desert. It looked as though Dibbler had dropped in at Borgles and hired the 20 people nearest the door, irrespective of their appropriateness, and had given them each Dibbler's idea of a desert bandit headdress. There were trollish sons of the desert. Rock recognized him and gave him a little wave. Dwarf sons of the desert, and shuffling into the end of the line, a small, hairy, and furiously scratching son in a headdress that reached down to his paws.
"Grab her, become entranced by her beauty, and then throw her over your pommel."
Dibbler's voice intruded into his consciousness. Victor desperately re-ran the half-heard instructions past his mind.
"My what?" he said.
"It's part of your saddle," Ginger hissed.
"Oh."
"And then you ride into the night, with all the sons following you and singing rousing desert bandit songs."
"No one'll hear them," said Sol, helpfully, "but if they open and shut their mouths, it'll help create a ambience."
"But it isn't the night," said Ginger. "It's broad daylight."
Dibbler stared at her. His mouth opened once or twice.
"Sol!"
he shouted.
"We can't film at night, Uncle," said the nephew hurriedly. "The demons wouldn't be able to see. I don't see why we can't put up a card saying night time at the start of the scene so that—" "That's not the magic of moving pictures," snapped Dibbler. "That's just messing about."
"Excuse me," said Victor. "Excuse me, but surely it doesn't matter, because surely the demons can paint the sky black with stars on it."
There was a moment's silence. Then Dibbler looked at Gaffer.
"Can they?" he said. "Nah," said the handleman. "It's bloody hard enough to make sure they paint what they do see, never mind what they don't."
Dibbler rubbed his nose.
"I might be prepared to negotiate," he said.
The handleman shrugged. "You don't understand, Mr. Dibbler. What they want money for, they don't really eat it. We start telling them to paint what isn't there, we're into all sorts of—"
"Perhaps it's just a very bright full moon," said Ginger.
"That's good thinking," said Dibbler. "We'll do a card where Victor says to Ginger something like, 'How bright the moon is tonight, Buana.'"
"Well, something like that," said Sol, diplomatically.